This is our fourth study in our series, China's Place in the Bible and History. And our fourth study is China's Astonishing Rise, beginning in about 1978. And for the last 40-odd years, China has risen astonishingly in the world's standings. So we're in part four of a five-part series, and that series has been looking at China's origins in Genesis, and then how the Sinites, the original Chinese, migrated across to the land we know as China today. Then we look particularly at that period that China itself calls its 100 years of humiliation, beginning in the 1840s and going through to after the Second World War. We followed through the rise of the Communist Party until the death of Mao Zedong in 1976. We've seen that by that time, America had begun a relationship with China. And it was after the death of Mao Zedong and the rise of the next leader, Deng Xiaoping, that China began its association with the West and its opening up to the world. Now, remember, we looked back at China in Genesis chapter 10 and saw that it was amongst the 70 nations named in Genesis chapter 10 that China is descended from the Canaanites. The eighth son of Canaan was named Sin, and from him came the Sinites. And they've inherited the curse that was placed upon the Canaanites back in Genesis. More of that in just a moment. And after the Tower of Babel, they were scattered away to the far east, right to the land where they are today, the farthest east they could go by land from the Middle East. Their role under the curse placed upon the Canaanites by Noah on behalf of God in Genesis chapter 9 and 10 and 11, we read all of those circumstances that took place leading up to the Tower of Babel. And as a result of the curse, they've developed remarkable strengths and skills in their role as servants to other nations. And now, in this last recent period, they're, without realizing that they have been under that curse, of course, are now attempting to break out of that servitude which has been placed upon them down through the centuries. We saw that from the early chapters of Genesis, the Sinites were scattered abroad. That term is used a number of times in Genesis 9, 10 and 11. They're scattered abroad to the land of Sinim, around about the year 2100 to 2000 BC. And with them came the curse of the Canaanites. That curse was placed in Genesis chapter 9, the last verses. Noah awoke from his wine after an unsavory incident. He places a curse upon Canaan. He says, "A servant of servants shall he be unto his brethren." Now, when a man of God who is a prophet of God places a curse like that upon a person, or on other occasions a blessing, the descendants of the object of the curse or the blessing receive that curse or blessing down through their generations. In this case, a curse. "Blessed be the Lord God of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. God shall enlarge Japheth," that is the European countries, "and he shall dwell in the tents of Shem," that is the Semitic peoples. They will cooperate together, "and Canaan shall be his servant." Now, as we mentioned, Deng Xiaoping from 1978 began a policy of engagement with the West. You can see there that he's visiting Jimmy Carter at the White House. He went down to Texas and went to a rodeo there and received his 10-gallon hat. And so a great association was formed between the Chinese and America. That began this 40-year rise, a bit more than 40 years now. But let's have a look at the words of Professor Graham Allison.
40 years ago, 1978, China sets out on its march to the market. At that point, what percentage of China's 1 billion citizens were struggling to survive on less than $2 a day? What do you think? 90. 9 out of every 10 on less than $2 a day. 2018, 40 years later, what about the numbers? Fewer than 1 in 100 today. And China's president has promised that within the next 3 years, those last tens of millions will have been raised up above that threshold. So it's a miracle, actually, in our lifetime. Former Czech president Václav Havel, I think, put it best. He said, all this has happened so fast, we haven't yet had time to be astonished. The consequences of this tectonic change will be felt everywhere. The past 500 years have seen 16 cases in which a rising power threatened to displace a ruling power. 12 of those ended in war.
Now, the Chinese always committed themselves to being hard workers and very efficient workers. In the 1800s, approximately, the Chinese migrated to many different countries. So the Chinese coolies became renowned for their willingness to work hard, very adaptable to different forms of hard labour, we might say, often for very low pay. But they were efficient workers, they were very reliable and competent workers. Noah, remember, back in Genesis chapter 9, speaks of Canaan and his descendants, including the Sinites, that they would be servants of servants. They knew how to work hard and they knew how to work well. But when it became obvious that they would become a good source for manufacturing for many other countries as a result of the opening up to the West, China opened many, many factories with multiple workers, process workers working very hard, very diligently, and of course they became more than just process workers. As time went on, they became highly qualified workers. Here's an example, the Nike shoe assembly factory in China, and many people in China still work for less than $5 a day. Here's another example of them working in an electronics factory, assembly workers in China. Many, many products are produced from such large factories with constant and willing workers. Now, as China began to open up their trade with the West, many Western leaders believed that China would actually change in character and that they would soon adopt Western values. Well, we know that over time that has proven not to be the case. Western leaders have been wrong in assessing what would happen as China opened up. In fact, we well remember the 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre, and China continues to put down protests in a pretty heavy-handed way. Now, the example, of course, in 1997 of the return of Hong Kong to China on the basis of an agreement where there would be a dual government relationship between Hong Kong and China, a transition agreement that was to run for 50 years where China would grant continued independence in many respects to Hong Kong, well, that fell apart, and we know the result of that.
China seems ready to outlaw what it considers sedition and terrorism with a National Security Act aimed at stopping Hong Kong's pro-democracy forces. The millions who took part in protests against China's encroachment on democratic rights last year. Those started as legal and peaceful demonstrations, deteriorating as both protesters and police became more violent.
Yes, the Hong Kong demonstrations were brutally suppressed as the world watched with very little that they could do about it, really. The British who'd handed over Hong Kong wiped their hands of what was going on there and weren't supportive at all of those who were trying to maintain their freedoms in Hong Kong. And now China has well and truly absorbed Hong Kong into its overall national structure. Democracy has been shut down. Now, without realising it, of course, down through history, China has been subject to the Canaanite curse. They show the results of that in their history. And it's been the source of the development of the national character over a period now of something like 4,000 years. But now, without realising, as we said, the curse that is upon them, they don't want to be servants anymore. They feel as though they've earned their right to take their place at the top of the national table internationally around the world. And here is Xi Jinping telling the world, we don't want to be servants anymore.
Now, 用蟹肉铸成的钢铁长城面前碰得头破血流。
In the last decade or so, China has developed dramatically in terms of their military expenditure and the building up of their various army, air force and navy, and they are influencing much that happens around their particular area and now the South China Sea and into the Pacific Ocean, as well as the Indian Ocean, might I say. The Pacific Ocean nations have been largely influenced by China's development of this new update on the old Silk Road, what they call the Belt and Road Initiative. And the Pacific nations have come under the influence of China in many respects because of huge expenditure, very large loans that have been given to those countries to help them develop. And of course, they've come under much of the influence of China. Australia has been endeavouring to counter that influence by also providing funding and various diplomatic initiatives that have been undertaken in the area of the Pacific, but China keeps upping the ante. And you can see from this map and chart just how much money China has been putting into the area and territories around Australia, buying a lot of influence in so doing. And there are great concerns about China's dealings even within Australia with the Victorian government and their control of the port of Darwin and the big coal port of Newcastle, very much under the influence of Chinese ownership. And in the South China Sea, they've made significant gains for control in that area. And it's a very big trade route right through those areas servicing Japan as well as China and Vietnam, many other countries in the region. A lot of trade flows through the South China Sea. And China has taken control of some very strategic islands in the area, has developed those islands and turned them into military and naval bases. So they do have a huge amount of control in that area, and they've developed and are still developing a very significant navy. That's on so many people's minds right now, is China going to try to take back Taiwan by force? They made it clear that they want Taiwan to be reintegrated into the mainland of China under their control. The situation, of course, was that after the end of World War II, Japan had been controlling Taiwan for 50 years, but with the defeat of Japan, Taiwan came back under the influence of China. China at that stage was being led by the nationalists under the leadership of Chiang Kai-shek. The civil war was still raging internally within China, with Mao endeavouring to overthrow Chiang Kai-shek. And eventually in 1949, 4 years after the end of the Second World War, the Communist Party under Mao was victorious, and Chiang Kai-shek and his 2 million strong army of nationalists moved across to Taiwan. Of course, China, the Communist Party, has always wanted Taiwan to be under their control. And that's a really hot point right at the moment, isn't it? So The other question that could result in a war with China, with other nations of the world, involves North Korea. North Korea is being supported by China, as it is a rogue state, as we know, and totally unpredictable, firing off missiles, testing them all over the place nearby, and having access to nuclear weapons. Could North Korea spark a conflict and China enter into a conflict with that as well? Of course, we all know that in the last 2 years, a virus sourced in China has caused fear and trouble around the world. It's been a terrible situation, and nothing has been resolved. It's not over yet by any stretch of the imagination. And many countries, of course, are asking just what did China have to do with the escaping of this virus? Of course, China is so strong and so influential internationally now that countries are too frightened to ask them too much about the virus, where it came from, and was it really something that they'd been experimenting with? Should China be held accountable? Should they make international reparations? Well, that's something we're really not likely to see, are we? But it's been a fearful disease. More than 5 million people around the world have died. So many countries, virtually every country in the world, affected, both in terms of medical issues and economic problems. But the medical facilities in many countries of the world have been absolutely stretched to the limit, and there has been fear in many, many countries as a result of this virus.
Stretchers, row after row. Comatose patients in isolation rooms. Every surface is dangerous, and so is the air, especially during an intubation.
Every day you're thinking, am I going to get really sick? Am I going to be able to recover? Am I going to be one of those young people that, for whatever reason, dies from it?
The history of this pandemic will be remembered not for briefings at the White House, but for the heartache in the hot zone.
Find that patient now. We need the patient to go upstairs, please.
Dr. Deborah White reminds me of a general commanding a battlefield.
I mean, this is what we train for. This is the moment in our career, because it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
She's trying to save lives.
Yeah, go upstairs.
While also keeping up morale. On this day, almost 800 New Yorkers died.
Okay, take some deep breaths. You're okay.
Doctors and nurses are risking their lives.
I was in the intensive care unit. The second patient who came in and was tested positive was a 27-year-old. I'm 29 right now.
I spent 12 hours by his bedside with all my PPE on. He would grab my hand, and I just kept telling him that everything is going to be okay, that we were doing the best we could. But I could see the fear in his eyes, and it was heartbreaking because this is still so new to us.
As you know, throughout this series, we've been concentrating on the rise of China and its history from a Bible perspective, knowing that China was descended from the Canaanites and came under the curse of the Canaanites down through its history. It does explain a lot of our perspectives about China as we look at it and see it from that biblical point of view. China has been under the curse of servitude down through history. That hasn't stopped their development in any way, and they've certainly become quite a significant civilization. Now, as they try to break free of that servant status, as we've seen over the last 40 years, we're seeing significant conflict perhaps arising as a result of that. You can see from this illustration how people are asking themselves, well, China has sort of come out of the genie's bottle over this period of time. Is it possible to put China's genie back into the bottle? Well, that's a significant question. But let's look at some of the amazing events which have taken place in recent times as China has risen from its servant status and is now endeavouring to take its place amongst the great nations of the world. We'll look at China's amazing progress from the point of view of its high-speed rail network, tremendous cities that have been built, many of them with GDPs, just the city itself, much larger than many, many other countries of the world. And we'll look at its spectacular highways and bridges as it's developed its huge infrastructure. It's absolutely amazing.
Two-thirds of the world's entire high-speed rail network is now in China. In the 12 years since its first line opened, the country has dramatically outbuilt every other nation and now plans to double the size of its high-speed network in just the next 15 years. Travel times have fallen, the country's economy has boomed, cities have exploded, and the rest of the world's been left wondering how they'll ever come close to building at such an insatiable pace. This is the unstoppable high-speed growth of China's high-speed rail network.
Onto what is fast becoming the eighth wonder of the world. China's road network. In 1988, China had no motorways at all. And now, 30 years later, it has 84,000 miles of them. That's more than any other country in the world. Just getting into their stride. Since 2011, they've been building 6,000 miles of motorway every year. 6,000 miles a year! It beggars belief, and it's not like the terrain is easy. Here, though, there ain't no mountain high enough, and there ain't no valley low enough to stop them. This bridge, for example, is 34 miles long. And then there's this one, the Douze Beipan Jian Bridge. You could fit the London Shard underneath it, twice over.
I'm telling you, in Britain, we're doomed. We're doomed.
Well, what a question. Are we really all doomed? The Bible has the answer. And our final session, number 5, China's future in God's plan, will give us all the answers that we can gain from the Word of God. So, let's move on now to part 5.